Lecture 6, The Opposing Sides, Part 2.
We spent our last lecture examining factors that favored either the North or the Confederacy as the two sides moved toward war. A population, the economy, professional military forces as advantages for the North, and war aims, conditions for victory, and geography as advantages for the Confederacy. Now we'll shift to an analysis of categories in which neither side had a clear edge. We'll start by looking at resources of military command, and then we'll move on to assess the performances of the two presidents, Lincoln and Davis, as war leaders, and we'll finish up by examining in brief detail the possibility that either England or France would intervene on the side of the Confederacy and thus change the overall balance of the war. But let's start with resources of command. One of the most persistent, durable myths about the Civil War is that the Confederacy had better military leadership but lost the war because they were simply overwhelmed by Northern might, by the number of sheer regiments that the North could deploy against the Confederacy, by the amount of materiel that the North could lavish on its war effort. These spectacularly gifted Confederate generals, especially Lee and Stonewall Jackson, runs a common argument, would have won a war in which the two sides had had even remotely equal resources of men and materiel. That's a basic of the lost cause interpretation of how the war played out and why the Confederacy lost, that these better Confederate generals were eventually overwhelmed, but it simply isn't true. The Confederacy didn't have better generals overall. It's easy to decide that they did if you only look at the Eastern Theater, and that is often the case because the Virginia, Maryland, Pennsylvania Theater often looms as most important in much of what's been written about the war. And if you just look at the East and see Lee and Jackson and James Longstreet and Jeb Stuart arrayed on one side against John Pope and Ambrose Burnside and Joseph Hooker and a group of other less talented Union generals on the other side, it's possible to conclude that indeed the Confederacy did have better generals and that they must have lost because they didn't have enough of anything else. But if you shift your lens of focus to the Western Theater, move beyond the Appalachian Mountains toward the Mississippi River Valley, you have the absolutely opposite situation in place. You have Grant and William Tecumseh Sherman and George H. Thomas and John Schofield and other very successful Union commanders fighting a group of Confederates that included Braxton Bragg and Leonidas Polk and others who were obviously not as talented as their Northern competitors. And the North achieved great success in the West, just as Lee and his lieutenants achieved great success in the East. So if we're assessing resources of command, looking at the entire landscape of the war, you end up with approximately equal numbers of very able officers, which is small on both sides, great officers. You have Lee and Jackson for the Confederacy. You have Grant and Sherman and perhaps Thomas and Sheridan for the North. Then you drop to a big mid-range where there are many competent officers, but not brilliant, on both sides, and then drop again to a rung where you have many officers on both sides in significant levels of command who are not very talented at all and who really aren't up to their jobs. But my point is that the whole picture shows approximately equal pools of command from which each side drew. The North did have a significant advantage in the number of West Pointers who fought for the North, and West Pointers will occupy most of the key posts during the war. Virtually all of the Army commanders were trained at West Point. Most of the Corps commanders were trained at West Point, the Corps being the next level of command down. Just below the Corps command were divisions. Divisions made up Corps, Corps made up armies. Most of the division commanders, the most successful ones, were also West Pointers. You drop down below the division level to brigades, and below brigades to regiments. Even at those levels, many West Pointers held commands at some point during their Civil War career. So West Point is a crucial contributing institution to the high commands of both sides. And in sheer numbers, the North had far more West Pointers. There were 824 West Point graduates on the active list at the outbreak of war, of whom 184 became Confederate officers and 640 became Union officers, a very large advantage to the North there.